Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the nonprofit Times, we see tons of great fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the nonprofit Times.
A coalition of local and national organizations is challenging Fidelity Charitable in what they describe as its role in funneling millions of dollars in systemic oppression. Unmasking Fidelity was born after a 2019 expose by nonprofit news outlet Sludge. It revealed anonymous donor-advised funds contributed millions to organizations identified as hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Some of those groups have taken issue with that designation over the years. Unmasking Fidelity's latest report, The People Disclose, highlights 10 organizations that represent a cross-section of tax-exempt nonprofits, quote, furthering various forms of systemic oppression that have received financial support from the nation's largest grantmaker. Hi, I'm Mark Arivna for the Nonprofit Times, and in this episode, I speak to Nadav David, New England Regional Organizer at Resource Generation, and Rama Kudemi, Campaign Director of Crescendo at the Action Center on Race and the Economy. Those are among the groups that make up Unmasking Fidelity, which has called on Fidelity Charitable to publicly disclose all contributions and related fees over the last 5 years to those organizations. They also ask that Fidelity share publicly its policies or screens that are used to determine which organizations can receive DAF grants. A spokesperson for Fidelity Charitable said that it does not comment on individual nonprofits, but pointed to the grant-making review process and guidelines found on its website. And now, here's my conversation with Nadav David and Rama Kudemi. Unmasking Fidelity sounds kind of an ominous, you know, and dark kind of foreboding topic. What is it and what is it all about, and who are you guys who are behind it?
Hi there. I am Nadav David. I'm based in Boston and I'm the New England Regional Organizer at Resource Generation. And Resource Generation is a national organization that works with young people with wealth and class privilege towards the equitable distribution of wealth, land, and power. So Resource Generation has been one of the anchor organizations of Unmasking Fidelity since it launched back in 2019. Maybe I'll pass it to Rama and then we'll share a little bit more background about Unmasking Fidelity.
Thanks, Nadav, and thanks, Mark, for having us on. So I'm Rama Kudemi. I am based right outside of Washington, D.C., and I am a campaign director at ACRE, the Action Center on Race and the Economy, and we focus on the intersection of racial justice and Wall Street accountability, and particularly I focus on a project we call Crescendo, which takes on corporate complicity in Islamophobia and anti-Muslim bigotry. I'll pass it back to you, Yav.
Great. And Unmasking Fidelity is a coalition of local and national organizations that are challenging Fidelity Charitable in their role in funneling millions of dollars to systemic oppression, both in the US, but also globally. So we came together back in 2019 after a report was released by Sludge that exposed millions of dollars from Fidelity Charitable's donor advised funds, fueling anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, and anti-LGBTQ groups. As folks may know, Fidelity is the largest DAF provider in the US and the largest charitable organization. So we chose to focus on Fidelity because of their scope and because of the impacts we believed winning our campaign and winning the demands of our campaign would have more broadly on philanthropy and on the field. So a little bit more information about our campaign and our coalition. Many of the local organizations that are involved in Unmasking Fidelity are based in Boston, where Fidelity is currently headquartered. They also have headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, where we have some activity as well for our campaign. So we believe our campaign to be a pretty unique coalition of groups. We have groups that are directly impacted by the issues in which we are fighting against. So we have the Muslim Justice League and the Asian American Resource Workshop, which are both Boston-based organizations. We have research organizations that are involved, such as Political Research Associates and Community Labor United. And we also have Resource Generation as a core partner of the campaign. And as I said, we're focused on organizing young people with access to wealth, many of which actually have accounts through Fidelity. So that's an important aspect of the group that we've brought together for Unmasking Fidelity.
It sort of sounds like, or reminds me at least, of the organizations out there that do shareholder advocacy for corporate, like for instance, for public companies. Is it comparable or analogous to what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I think it's connected in some ways. Fidelity is a private company, so there's less we can do in terms of activating shareholders, but we are interested and have successfully engaged several hundred Fidelity account holders, both for Fidelity Investments, which is the for-profit side, as well as Fidelity Charitable, which is the nonprofit arm of Fidelity that runs their donor advised fund program. And I'll just say a little bit more about our history. So in the fall of 2019, after the report came out from Sludge, that showed Fidelity's role in funneling these millions of dollars, we started to organize actions, both in person, like outside of Fidelity headquarters. And we also delivered a letter to Fidelity executives that called on them to create a screen or a filter of some kind to prevent the organizations that had been identified from receiving funding. At that time, Fidelity did meet with our coalition, but it didn't lead to much, and they were unwilling to commit to clear, transparent changes. So because they're a private company, from that point, we had to figure out what were some other leverage points that we could engage. Fast forward to 2021, Rama is going to speak a little bit to the attack that happened at the Capitol and how that was another opening for our campaign.
So at ACRE particularly, Mark, to your point in terms of what kind of activism we particularly want to do and the similarities to shareholder stuff, we at ACRE focus on corporate power and Wall Street power, and the idea being that it's not only about us having power as communities, as impacted folks, through our votes, but also the fact that, we have power as consumers, as customers, as investors. And so, Fidelity Charitable, is a big player in the field of philanthropy. And that means we can push through our demands around, a better world as we're doing policy work, but also through these other kind of means of organizing and different targets. And so in January 6, 2021, as we all know, there was the attack on the Capitol, and it was just kind of another opportunity to bring more attention to Unmasking Fidelity in general. So the coalition, alongside 24 other orgs, demanded that Fidelity Charitable hashtag stop funding fascism as part of a call to action to highlight how Wall Street and corporate funding did in fact support the insurrection, and particularly the role white supremacy played in funding that violence. One of the organizations that we highlight in our Unmasking Fidelity demands is Turning Point USA, which since 2016 received just over $1.5 million through Fidelity Charitable DAFs. And so the group, we know via its political arm, played a role in fomenting the January 6th attacks, like providing buses to transport attendees and sponsoring the rally that later led to and motivated the attack. And so that was a kind of another opening for us to talk about this problem and what the role of philanthropy institutions play in fueling this type of violence. And then later that year, we relaunched the campaign. And now with a new set of demands, knowing that Fidelity Charitable has so far, like Nav mentioned, ignored what we had been calling for, especially claiming that they are, you know, quote unquote, cause neutral, and our new set of demands that we're now working on center around disclose, divest, and repair, and really focusing in on systemic oppression globally and the role Fidelity Charitable plays in that.
And so what kind of response? It doesn't sound like you got much of a response from the first letter in, I think you said it was 2019. You sent another one in, I think the fall of 21, was it? Have you had any sort of response from Fidelity to your letters?
Yeah, we had the most active response in the in 2019, in the first round. So they did respond in writing, agreeing to a meeting with our organizations. And said very clearly to what Rama had mentioned that Fidelity DAFs are cause neutral, and therefore they aren't willing to create a screen of the kind that we had demanded of them. We then had that meeting with Fidelity leaders and staff in the fall of 2019. And then since then, we were part of a larger group that sent a letter around January 6th and didn't hear anything. And then again, in the fall of 2021, we didn't hear back again. So there have been numerous times in which we've tried to engage with them and they haven't responded.
I just add, and like, they haven't responded, and we know they've continued this practice of funneling this, you know, this money. And we're talking about, again, really problematic organizations. Like particularly, you know, from our end, you know, at Acre's end and Crescendo's work specifically on Islamophobia, we're talking about orgs that have a long history of anti-Muslim, spreading anti-Muslim propaganda and racism against Muslim communities. So for example, another report, another org we highlight in the report is the David Horowitz Freedom Center, which is very famous for anti-Muslim projects like Jihad Watch and Islamofascism Awareness Week on campuses, projects whose sole purpose is to contribute to systemic oppression of Muslim communities by influencing the media, public opinion, and the government against Muslims. And the David Horowitz Freedom Center, again, has gotten like $2 million since 2016 through Fidelity Charitable DAFs. And so it's particularly worrying that not only has Fidelity Charitable not responded, but like just has continued this practice.
There's more about unmasking Fidelity and where donor privacy fits in right after this.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag #FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more than 30 years, the Nonprofit Times has been the leading business publication for nonprofit management. To subscribe, visit shopthenonprofittimes.com. You'll also find special issue coverage, relevant research like our salary and benefits report, and best nonprofits to work for, plus other special reports and webinars. And keep up with the latest breaking news and in-depth reporting at thenonprofittimes.com.
And now, more about unmasking Fidelity with Nadav David and Rama Kudemi.
And I understand Fidelity's the largest DAF, or really the largest charity in the country at this point. Have you looked at communicating with other DAFs? Since they're also quite large, multi-billion dollars, but not quite the size of Fidelity is massive. You know, Schwab Charitable, Vanguard, those are pretty big too. Is that something that you'll eventually look at, or is you focusing on Fidelity because it's the first one and or the biggest one, and maybe after that it'll get easier? Not easier, but you know, what domino type of effect?
Yeah, we haven't we haven't currently or to this point directly challenge any of those larger other players. I will say though that we have been in communication with quite a few smaller DAF providers, like local foundations and more progressive foundations that have instituted screens. So a parallel project that's called Hate Is Not Charitable launched in 2019 after this Sledge report. And that campaign or project was organized by the Amalgamated Foundation. And they've engaged hundreds of foundations and DAF providers in committing to a screen that uses the Southern Poverty Law Center. So while our demands around creating a screen are beyond the scope of just the Southern Poverty Law Center list, we do believe that that is like a useful contribution, and that if some of those other players like Schwab Vanguard were to at least take that step, that that would have an enormous impact on the space. So at this point, we don't have plans to focus on the other targets, because we believe that winning any part of these demands with Fidelity will have a reverberating and hopefully reciprocating effect on DAF providers as a whole.
And is that the only screen that you'll be using, or that you want to use the Southern Poverty Law Center hate group class? Because I know there's been some pushback and critiques of, not borderline hate groups, but some folks have pointed out that, you know, this legitimate group is quote unquote being branded as a hate group, and they criticize the Southern Poverty Law Center's classification on that. Can you respond to something like that?
Yeah, I think what we would love to do, like, there's been important work done to at least even push back against funding to known hate groups. Again, it's very unfortunate that like that was something that needed a lot of pushing back on, that it wasn't just an automatic, like, if a group lands on a hate group watch list, maybe you should not be giving them money at all as a philanthropic institutions. But definitely we want to expand beyond the hate framework, because what we want to talk about is systemic oppression, like white supremacy, like Islamophobia. And for our coalition, it extends beyond, you know, these groups, like you're saying, Mark, that are formally recognized as quote unquote hate groups. We need to tackle the structural nature of the problem. It's not only that Fidelity Charitable is making contributions to these groups that spread hateful ideologies, but the direct complicity that these orgs have in entrenching systemic oppression globally. And hate for us is not a sufficient framing of the scale and power of these organizations to inflict harm. We need to address in general the role of philanthropic institutions and corporations in playing in upholding these systems of oppression. And we really hope this report will contribute to that. And like one example of an org that I'll bring up that really brings up kind of the global aspect of the nature, and an org that would probably not, based on the way hate groups are listed or the typical definition of a hate group that people think about, the Central Fund for Israel, for example, which we've documented has received about $25 million in DAFs from Fidelity Charitable since 2016. The Central Fund of Israel raises money in the United States that ends up supporting the building of settlements, of Israeli settlements on stolen Palestinian lands. And last year, six congresspeople submitted a letter to the Treasury Department asking that their IRS status be removed because they fund, again, the building of settlements, which is considered illegal under international law, but also by the United States government itself. And so I think that's where, like, this, you know, a group like the Central Fund of Israel is not going to be considered under a general hate groups label usually. But why is Fidelity Charitable, any other kind of charity foundation, sending money to such groups?
Where does donor privacy fit into this scenario?
Yeah, well, our first demand when we relaunched the campaign in the fall of 2021 was around disclosing the past 5 years of contributions to the 10 organizations that we highlight in the report that was recently released. And one piece that we are very clear about is that we were demanding a disclosure of total amounts rather than individual contributions. So from early in the campaign, we were clear that we're not interested in engaging around, you know, individual donors. We're interested in challenging the ways in which this has become a system and caused violence, right? So rather than focusing on donor disclosure or donor privacy, we've actually focused our energy on how does an institution like Fidelity, and thereby philanthropy as a whole, enable these organizations to receive significant funding and thereby enable the violence that results from those organizations' work. So that's really where our focus is. And we are not interested in knowing or disclosing the information of individual donors. I think we do feel clear that there are changes that need to be made in the donor advised fund space and system that are beyond the scope of our campaign. But I know as a staff member of Resource Generation that we have called for, that we've encouraged in other ways. So an example is increasing required payouts of donor advised funds. That is in the interest of our campaign broadly, but it's not necessarily within the scope of the demands that we are focusing in on. So that's some of my thoughts on that. I think Rama wanted to also share a little bit on that end.
Yeah, what I would just add it too is like our disclosed demand was also around the idea of transparency. And again, transparency in terms of the institutional policies. Who is Fidelity, you know, how does Fidelity Charitable decide, you know, who gets what charities get money through their DAF system? Have they ever actually rejected any advisors in terms of where the money should go? Things that should be very typical of any kind of organization and institution of being transparent. You know, we have these same demands, transparency demands, for example, and other campaigns we work on at Crescendo related to tech companies and how they make their decision-making processes. And so I think it's very important that, like, as we're calling for accountability, that these demands around transparencies aren't kind of misused as a way to scare people away from our campaign, but rather to be like, no, this is actually what we need to live in a better and healthier society, is to know exactly how these institutions that have a lot of money and can potentially have a lot of impact on our lives are taking their responsibility, how seriously they're taking it.
When you talked about transparency, it reminded me of the Wall Street Journal had an opinion piece in January from Senior Counsel of Corporate Engagement for Alliance Defending Freedom. That's one of the organizations that Unmasking Fidelity really hits at, especially in this new report from your organization. He described the groups behind Unmasking Fidelity as radicals and had some other points to make about the organization. What would you say in response to that piece or to that gentleman?
Yeah, I think we know orgs that we name in the report are paying attention to our campaign. And so I think it's really important that institutions aren't distracted by these types of attacks, particularly because they tend to be right-wing attacks and our communities who are impacted by these directly, and rather focus at the issue at hand, the systemic oppression and violence that unfortunately these organizations support both in the US and globally, and how to make sure, you know, charity institutions like Fidelity Charitable are not complicit in that.
You mentioned Turning Point USA. Your average person might say, well, that's a political group. It's just politics. You know, it gets nasty and mean. Why limit their ability to raise money for what they believe is important?
So I think something to keep in mind is that, one, we try in our coalition to push back on the idea of both sides and really think about a power analysis in terms of who does and does not have power in these situations. And there's no, it's, you know, cutting funding to organizations that help support systemic oppression against, you know, queer communities, Muslim communities, Black and brown communities, indigenous communities, you know, all these communities across the globe. We highlight certain number of those organizations in our report, but there's many more out there. You know, demanding a cut to that funding is not the same as, say, right-wing groups wanting to punish progressive organizations and Black and brown organizations for just doing their work. So that's one way, you know, to think about it, is that this is not a both sides issue. This is an issue of power and where our values should be at. I think what I will add to, in terms of just like these organizations, they get charity status from the IRS. That's a different conversation, you know, beyond also the scope of our campaign, though it is something that, you know, we potentially in the future can think about as a way to also push back on the idea that these organizations are able to label themselves as charities and thus got get that type of money and tax, you know, tax deductions from for folks who donate to them. But that does not mean that Fidelity Charitable itself has to say, well, we will be the ones who help, you know, through our DAF system, get money to these organizations. And that's an important part also in terms of, again, the responsibility of philanthropic institutions. Just because something is legal, just because something is like, oh, it's, you know, it's just political, everyone can get a say, it gets nasty, we don't want to take a side, that does not mean that is the right decision. But for Fidelity Charitable, that's the moral decision, the principled decision. We are asking Fidelity Charitable to stick to its own values. You know, when Abigail Johnson, I believe, when, you know, the uprisings were happening in the summer of 2020 around George Floyd's murder, was talking about like, yeah, we do have a responsibility in this moment to think about the role of philanthropic institutions. So we know this is something from leadership of Fidelity itself that they're discussing. We just want this in a, as an additional consideration as they are thinking about their role in this moment as, again, the largest grant maker in the country.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that, to that point, that last point, that Fidelity has supported both, you know, racial justice by putting out statements in 2020 and beyond. And also in the case of Alliance Defending Freedom, Fidelity has policies they've related to as LGBTQ workers and employees. And they've also put out statements of support and resources for LGBTQ couples who are doing financial planning. So they've clearly taken some level of a stance in support of LGBTQ people, and Alliance Defending Freedom is directly opposing that through their work around advocating for the forced sterilization of transgender people and laws criminalizing other LGBTQ people. So there seems to be some real dissonance here that Fidelity is living with and not really facing in a legitimate way. So that's part of what our call is about as well.
Donor advised funds have been in the news about philanthropy for many years now. Transparency is a big issue for a lot of groups in terms of DAFs. Are you partnering with other organizations or other people who are pushing for more transparency with DAFs?
I would say we're not formally partnering on the campaign, but there are organizations who have signed on in support of our demands that have done that work before. So as I said, my organization, Resource Generation, has done some work around philanthropic accountability in the past. And there are other organizations who are in support of our work that have as well.
Yeah, because Nadav, you mentioned, did I say that right, Nadav? You mentioned earlier accelerating DAF distributions and stuff like that. That's been a big, some groups are really pushing and advocating for that. And it sounded like some similar sort of goals on that end.
Yeah, I will say that I think transparency overall for DAFs in the field would benefit this campaign's demands as well. Because of the ways that Fidelity is able to hide behind current DAF policies, it would open up a lot of possibility for us to develop a screen with them that is publicly available and transparent.
If you had 60 seconds to talk to fundraisers or charity executives or anybody about what's your coalition all about, what would you tell them?
What I would say is that it's you know, there's, again, that responsibility of what, you know, having wealth and access to money and access to deciding who does and does not get that money is very important. We know there is such a need for so much important organizing and advocacy out there. There's a lot moving in policy world, both in the US and abroad. And I think, you know, when we think about the idea of charity and philanthropy, we always automatically go to like, oh, it's doing good in the world. And sadly, it is not doing good in the world. So what steps can you take whether as a donor, whether as a fundraiser, whether as someone who works at one of these institutions, to ensure you are doing good and definitely not doing harm, because I guess these organizations that we that are in this report are doing lots of harm, and people may not necessarily be aware of it because they're just like, oh, I'm just giving to a charity. And that doesn't take away from your responsibility to know what's going on with your money. And particularly with an organization and a funder like Fidelity Charitable with so many resources, they, you know, they just need to put in more time and effort to make this happen. And they have the resources to be more transparent and to set the stage for others to take similar action in the future.
Yeah, I would add that I think it's important for organizations, fundraisers, foundations, others, to really think about where they have leverage on these types of issues, where they're not already engaging. I think a lot of foundations and funders do really good work with one hand, but might be invested in or might have connections to organizations and that are doing harm in other ways. So I think our call is for people to think really holistically about their impact and for organizations and institutions to do that in an authentic way. And as we're calling with Fidelity, to recognize when harm happens and when repair is needed. So from Fidelity, that would look like repairing and redistributing money and resources to communities who've been most impacted by this DAF program and their lack of transparency, and them allowing millions of dollars to go to these organizations. So repair looks like that in Fidelity's context, but I think in the context of other organizations, it can look many, many different ways. So we would love to connect and support parallel campaigns, and also for folks from the organizations who are listening to join us in using your leverage and power to challenge Fidelity and to change philanthropy as a whole.
Great. Well, Rama and Nadav, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a really interesting conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mark.
And people can definitely get involved by visiting our website, unmaskingfidelity.org. There'll be a lot of different ways for you to get plugged in.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the Fresh Research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT Library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag Fresh Research. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.